May 5, 1982, Long Beach, California. Saul Alexander, interviewed by Kay Brigel.
Oh, I don't have too much depth of knowledge of it. I was just making general knowledge.
You were just graduating from high school when they incarcerated.
Yeah.
So you probably don't remember that. But
it was about 21, 22 when they. Yeah, about 23. Right after I got out of high school.
But was it different on Signal Hill than in Long Beach? I guess it was liquor. Or Long Beach was dry.
No, I don't remember that there was. Of course, during Prohibition days,
yeah,
there was liquor all over anyway. Bootleggers were roaming the town, especially the oil fields. So.
And you said that the Dittons would go to school beans to Wilmington and bring back liquor.
Yeah, they were surrounded by it, but I don't recall, say that Signal Hill was in itself wet.
Okay.
That's right.
What about the government? Were there people you knew in the government that people you knew from the oil business?
In the Signal Hill government or Long Beach?
In Signal Hill.
Not during those early days, and even later, I only knew oh, they had a man that had to do with inspection of leases and enforcing requirements that were ordinances that were required about cleaning up stumps and keeping the leases clean, fire hazards and all that. I knew some of them down through the years. There's one on there now, Ollie Cobal, who does that job now, and he was a production man for Walter Scott. I think he's a brother-in-law, and for many years, and then he eventually had an offer to go with the city of Signal Hill in that position some years ago. Must be 12, 15 years ago, and he's still there.
Who's Walter Scott?
Walter Scott was one of the producers around the hill here who pulled out recently, I'd say 2, 3, 4 years ago, who I think I described it like the Bo Cockrell. He was one of that type that came in during the Depression and salvaged wells and put them on and eventually was eminently successful. Real hard worker and did a lot of work himself, you know, and couldn't afford too much help and during those Depression days and gathered wealth together. And later on, well, when he could buy a well, it was already producing it, you know, he had finances, he'd pick up a well now and then, and I think his last purchase was from Signal Oil Gas, who was selling their local production off. And he and Dan Agajanian, Boot and Dan, you know, the famous football player, went in with him and bought those 6 or 8 wells, I think it was 6, from Signal Oil Gas. Now, a few years ago, both he and Dan sold those, and Walter Scott sold his individual ownership in, I think, 10 or 12 wells. He did very well. I see him every now. He's a member of the club, and like Ben was there when I left to play in Jim Rummy. Ben and his brother, J.C. Agajanian, they come in practically every day when it's not football season and he's following the Dallas Cowboys around. He works with Tom Landry, the manager of the team back there. Yeah, Walter was one of those few successful ones that gathered wealth together during those days. And
it's the
Hill
Hill, a more kind of wide open place,
the
London Club, and
lots of feeling
that I was
going to
get from the Kid Mexico
story. And well, but, not necessarily so, except I would say, well, that wouldn't be a true statement. I was going to say that during Prohibition days up till 33, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And when did we initiate? About 1920?
Yeah.
About 1920, and it lasted 13 years until Roosevelt came in. I would say that within the city, the bootleggers weren't bothered much. The enforcement of it. I know it was almost wide open. You just order liquor, and they'd come right to your office or warehouse or with their backups in, or even their imported liquor. Some of it was legitimate liquor, and some of it was homemade this and homemade that, bass up gin and beer, but mostly it was hard liquor. And I would say, in that respect, I might be right that there was less enforcement of that kind of thing.
What about gambling?
Well, they gambled as much as they wanted around the hill. It wasn't I don't think it was a prevalent thing in volume and in many places to gamble. If they wanted to play poker, they'd get together in some warehouse or office to just play it. And the truth were known, that's how the Long Beach Petroleum Club started. Did I tell you that?
Yeah, tell
it
on the case.
Well, quite a number of them. I wasn't one of them because I wasn't playing Jim Rummy then. I don't play a lot of it now, but and they'd meet around at Fifth Ashton's restaurant on Willow Street. It was a little called the Green Shack, right on Lime and Willow there in northeast corner. And she had nice lunches, just a little place, but what she got there was very good, especially her pies. I finally got her to make some banana fritters that I liked so well. She was a good cook. And they set the counter there, and she had a few little small tables for two, and they'd play during and post-luncheon period there, and then they'd meet at Curly's, and they'd play Gin Rummy there, and then let's say there was another restaurant, I don't remember, up there on Willow. Some woman operated that, and some of them would meet there now and then and play Gin Rummy. So some of them were, very substantial in the art business. They liked to play cards when they wanted to play cards, and they were too busy. And I think they finally conceived the idea that they ought to have a club where they could enjoy themselves privately. And I wasn't actually in on the early organization of it, because I wasn't even a member until about 4 or 5 years after it was inaugurated and started. They started out finally, at least the upstairs to the old Rickarts there on Atlantic, what do they call it now? I remember Rickarts. Well, it was a Cadillac dealer downtown, one of the owners. And the new organized club leased the upstairs from him. They had a bar and a real spacious big room up there. And I was there frequently, invited as a guest, and And I remember having meetings with, at that time, headed by Cy Rubel, who was, I think he was a vice president of the Union Oil Company. And during the battle over Proposition 4, Union Oil Company, incidentally, was one of the major companies whose opinion and whose interest opposing the bill coincided with the independents who were mostly fighting it, calculating that it was to their detriment if the thing was passed. So Cy Rubel was heading up the campaign against it, more or less, and we met there frequently. I worked on the campaign, and so I was invited then, of course, to those meetings, and we would meet upstairs there in their quarters, and Cy was one of the finest men on the oil business. He was well regarded, and one of the best presence of Union Oil Company, I would say, from the standpoint of good rapport with the public relationship. He's well-liked, confident man, and top white oil man. I mean, he was well-regarded. So I think the club really started because they wanted the private place. And then it was kind of a little ridiculous because there wasn't a club around here. The oil area all around us here. And it,
do you know the names of some of the founders?
Yes, they're listed in my directory if you'd like to copy them off. They're indicated if they're founding members. Would you like to do that?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I'll get that for you if you want it now.
Well, you might as well, I guess.
All right. Well, key of it is right here, the top code here, C, indicating charter member. If you want to take this and just copy them off.
Okay. Are there some that just come to mind as being the people that you think of as once you started?
Well, yes. Well, I shouldn't say that because see if I see some of the ones on. Yeah, Jack Augsburger and most of them I knew, all right, but yeah, Jim Bragg and Bob Brawley and Dick Brawley and Ted Brawley, father and two sons in the B&B Pipe Company, and Jack Bush and Clark Burgess, and I know Chet Yonker was because he was one of the avid Jim Rumley players. He was a friend of mine. He died a couple of years ago.
Were these mainly people who were in supplies, or were they mostly supply people, or?
The membership was all those related to Albany, producers, refiners, pipeliners, supply service companies of all kinds, even attorneys that specialize in oil patch legalism, legal practice. And then they let me say at this point too, actually there wasn't quite enough in those days in particular support for the type and propensity of a thing that was starting just in the oil patch. You know, there was an oil glut beginning to, and there were some difficult times in the 50s. And so they allowed and created an associate membership situation where non-oil patch people could become members. Their costs were the same, their privileges were the same. The only difference, they couldn't be in management or have a vote in the management, that is, electing any of the directors, or did they have equity in the thing. That membership has been closed for about a year or two now. I think maybe about 25% of our membership, though, are associate members. So there was them created enough membership to sustain a club like we have there. And they have all the same privileges. And all the ramifications, all the different related things to the oil field, pipeline companies and refining people and geophysicists, geologists, engineers, and all of them. They were all eligible as resident members. Mm-hmm. And some of them, of course, the organized are and have been charter members. Yes. Charles Catherine.
Your company sometimes buy membership?
Yes, they don't have a company membership. The companies have to buy membership for those individuals that they desire to be a member, and if they're important enough to them to pay for their membership and their dues and all that. Yes, but they don't have a company membership. You can't blank of a company and everybody. They all have to be individual memberships. I have to belong to three in this area, because they don't have reciprocal agreements locally. I think I told that to you. At Bakersfield, Los Angeles, and Long Beach. But a membership card from any one of those three will give you reciprocal services anywhere else. As you pointed out, just anywhere else in the United States, I've been to quite a few of them, and was with me on vacation, and we used the one at Anchorage, Alaska, and I was at Calgary numerous times, and Castle Rock, and Denver, Tulsa, and Houston, Dallas, all those towns. But not locally, you don't reciprocate here. I'm a non-resident member at Bakersfield, but when you're that far away, they allow you a non-membership, non-resident membership. Most of the supply men were like Jack Hurley and Dick Mitchell and Archie Strange, what's his name? I think I don't know. Yeah, Sheffield. You've seen that name a lot, huh?
Yes.
He donated the money for the North Long Beach YMCA out there.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, you know, he left him. He donated that mural in the club, the big mural. And then I happen to know some of the board members, that the minister, his endowment fund, and because I knew all of them, they were friends, or they worked for him in years back. And so they administer a fund that donates $300,000+ a year to things. The income from that trust has to be spent every year. But Fairfield was a really local man, and he confined it to things just in this area, Long Beach Signal Hill area. They're not permitted to disperse any money outside of this area. And it's been a nice little lot of money to help different needy things around town. Here in Signal Hill. He's a very opulent and successful man.
Where did the land come from? Do you know?
Well, they just bought it. It's just vacant property and they just bought it.
It didn't belong to anybody either. I was thinking that it did, since that was an oil field. And you said that when the club was built, there were even oil wells in the parking.
Well, out in that middle strip, there were two wells there, producing up until about 1932, long before they had the club there. That was mostly vacant land. My partner and I owned a well right on 36th Street there, on the alley, 36th, and I told you that we got from Art Delaney, purchased from him. And north of us, there wasn't anything, just taken property. As far as I know, I can find out, but I believe it was just available properties they bought.
No, I just wondered, since it was an oil area.
Yeah, well, yes. I could look that up. That's a good question. Could have belonged to somewhere. I mean, I gave it to him, or I don't know that. I don't believe so. I know when I was on the board, this one year I was on the board, partly before they moved to the mountains, and they had just bought the lot to the north of the building for additional parking. They had already owned the one to the south of the building. That's a good question. But I believe it was just land they bought from normal landowners. Probably didn't get the oil rights with it, though. Normally people living in an area like that would normally retain oil rights, although production wasn't particularly prolific out there. It's just sort of needles and pins fingers out there. It wasn't the best part of the Signal Hill oil field area, but there was production and went on out to the northwest away. Some of them still producing, but I'll ask somebody that knows. That's a good question.
Wasn't there a big house in there where that retirement tower is now? I don't know what
you're asking.
Wasn't there an oil man that had a big house in there?
You mean where the club is?
Yeah. isn't that...
Across from it? Yeah, there was a fellow by the name of Nimrod Lyon. We called him Nimrod. Nimrod Lyon. They had a large house. I think it was a brick structure. A very substantial home to the, right to the west of Linden there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there was a house across there somewhere. I think that was belonged to Nimrod Lyon.
Wasn't there one to the east also that's based on Atlantic?
You know, your memory's better than mine. They could have been, because after all, California Heights area, this area was going by then, and it was probably was. Yes.
I just thought you might remember because you had an oil nearby.
Yeah, that would have been north of us, so I think a little way.
Well, I think you know that. Tell me about, you said you owned this oil well with Art Delaney. Tell me about him. What?
About who?
Art Delaney.
Art Delaney?
Yeah.
Well, he was a successful independent that drilled quite a number of wells. He was an explorationist and successful one. I don't know where he emanated from. But I became closer to his children later on, although a partner and I did buy this one well from him, direct from him. He was still living and successful, particularly when they had the what is known as the deep sand boom. Beginning about 1928, they found a zone, depending on what location on the hill you drill. Generally, that comes to the south of the Cherry Hill Fault. If you're over towards the top of the structure, you'd probably find it around 6,500 feet. It's a good thick zone, and gradually going north, west, you'd have to go slightly deeper down around 7,500 feet along in there to reach the same zone. It would dip that much from the east end over to the northwest. But they got terrific wells there. The Art Delaney, I know, had three over there across the west side of Atlantic, south of Spring Street. Was 3,000 to 4,000 barrels a day wells. And it produced higher gravity oil than the upper zones, of course. The initial wells would be 30-31 gravity oil instead of in the 20s. And there were lots of solution gas with it. And he was very successful in that particular zone. I know a little about that because about that time the company I was with, Century Oil, was it? All right, Delaney?
Yeah.
They drilled a good well. There were numerous other people drilling all kinds of independents. Well, see, the company I was then with had bought Art Delaney out, all his wells on Signal Hill,
so
nearly all of them.
Golden
Door? At No Century Oil Company. And so I had gone with them, and they had already bought Art Delaney out, among other wells that they had bought to other places. And they were good wells. In fact, some of the best wells remaining outside the unit operation today are in that zone. There's still some wells do 50, 60, 70 barrels a day, which is pretty good after, what did I say, 28, 29, 30 when that boom was on. At that time, it's not too bad. It's a big water dive, of course. It's a massive water dive, and you don't have to use quite a bit of water. Long way, but it's worth it if you get enough oil in today's prices.
What about your partner? You kind of talked about him a little bit, Charlie
Feldman. Well, he was one of them.
Yeah.
First time I was in production was with Mr. Charles Cox, who was the vice president of Century Oil Company, who were producers and refiners, small refinery across from Hancock there. He and I went together, I think I told you, and took Will out of bankruptcy.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, that could have been a conflict of interest because we're both employees of Century Oil Company. But we handled it.